Hello everyone and welcome to the Constructive Criticism Network. This network is here to help you improve at Magic the Gathering at every level. From Pauper Leagues to Top 1000 Mythic, we've got you covered. If you want to hear the entire network, head on over to our sponsor at PureMTGO.com, where you can hear each and every show, each and every week, and check out their sponsor, MTGO Traders, and tell them that the CCMTG Network sent you. Now sit back, enjoy the show. From YouTube, podcasts, and more, here's this week's episode from ConstructiveCriticism.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 327th episode of Constructed Criticism. I'm your host, Mason, and I'm joined by Allie each and every week. Allie, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I just had some lunch. Love to eat.
Love to eat? What'd you have for lunch? What are you rocking?
I had a nice wrap. It had spinach and buffalo chicken and bacon and Gouda cheese. It was very good. Oh, and onions.
Gouda cheese.
I love Gouda.
Gouda's good. It's just so dang, we're balling out for lunch, I'm feeling. I don't know, maybe I'm not treating myself right. Open up a whole new door.
Yeah, you gotta make some really nice sandwiches for yourself.
Yeah, I had a sandwich for lunch too. I sliced up a banana.
Ooh.
Yeah, you know, put some peanut butter on there and bam, called it a day. Just a casual one, you know? Nothing crazy.
A nice casual lunch.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you need the Gouda, sometimes you need bread, peanut butter, and a banana. Call it a day.
Oh, I can't do peanut butter. It's too, like, makes your mouth, like, do the mouth thing where you're like,
blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you need, like, a tall glass of milk after one bite.
Whoa, now we're about to open up a whole new door. So you're pro-milk? Not, like, from, like, a health, like, you like milk?
Of course. Why wouldn't you like milk?
I don't know. Sometimes I drink milk, I'm just kind of like, what am I doing here?
Milk is great.
I like soy milk.
I've never had that.
You never had soy? Oh, that's pretty good. You should give it a try sometime.
All right.
Get it with your Gouda cheese, you know? Treat yourself.
I'll put it on the list of things to do.
Yeah, bougie up a little bit, you know? I'll drop a tier 2 sub. I'll help you out. All right, well, today we're going to be talking about Historic, so pretty exciting stuff when it comes to that, because I don't know about you, Allie, but I've actually loved Historic for like a while now, kind of since Anthology 2, and so everyone getting to this format is super exciting. Getting to do a podcast on this is really exciting.
Yeah, I actually haven't played a ton of Historic until like last weekend, I think, and since then I've just been playing a bunch of different lists that I found from the opens that Jeff Hoagland's been running, but I have completely fallen in love with this format. It feels like there's just like something for everyone.
Yeah, it really does. The format's like weirdly wide open, and also I can't figure out why, and maybe we just haven't figured out the format yet, but there's like not a lot of really strong answers yet. Nothing's really out of control yet, which is a weird place to be in, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think after this last weekend, we've, like, there was another Jeff Hoagland open, and,
Hooglandia.
Hooglandia, and, like, a couple decks kind of just, like, took over the, like, top 8 or top 16, but you also still saw, like, really good win rates from some, like, lower represented decks, too, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the format's just weirdly wide and weirdly healthy right now. And it's a great time, though. Love it. And we're going to talk more about that later into the show. But, Allie, we're going to go with always improving part of the show, because if you're not getting better, you're kind of pulling yourself back. And during COVID, we got to get ready for the eventual return one day. You know, the thing that we tell our children about back when we used to be able to gather to play Magic. Allie, how did you improve in this last week?
How did I improve? That's a great question. I guess, so, I mean, you and anyone else who follows my Twitter might notice, or might know that I had a couple issues with my stream this past weekend, and I found out my overlay was just, like, eating all of my CPU and my computer, but, so I was, like, forced to switch into, because I wanted to stream Historic, and I was kind of forced into switching back to Modern, and I was not very happy about that, because I'm like, this format sucks, like, not very excited to play this. The stream's gonna be awful. But I actually just had a really good stream, and I think I like played really well. I played Jund, and I finally started winning with Jund for the first time since, like, Lurrus came out. don't really know, like, what happened, and maybe have to, like, go back and actually take time to think about the difference between, like, that league versus my other leagues, but I guess just, like, continuously, like, practicing a deck that, I mean, like it was super different than regular Jund, so maybe just getting into treating it as a completely different deck and approaching, like, the lines and play patterns differently, and I finally, like, got it and understood. So I guess that's something I was always improving on.
I have a question about specifically about that, because I think one of your strengths, and you've said this as well, is your like, innate ability and your ability to pick up a deck very quickly is, I think, like, a big strong suit to you, and you've mentioned that too, like MC7 and just things like that, like opens, you know, like you're just kind of picking up decks, and you, like, especially when we play SCGs, we don't have a lot of time to practice, especially you when you were finishing up school and stuff. What do you think about the Jund deck was so different that kind of slowed you down there? Do you think Companions adding that whole new play dynamic was it, or do you have any sort of thoughts on that?
I mean, I think for the most part, like, I approached the deck of just like, oh, this is still Jund, so I, like, play this way and, like, do this. So, like, obviously, like, Companions had changed that in general, but I don't think it was a me not grasping how Companions function, just kind of, like, the overall deck in general. I think I was treating it as something it wasn't.
Gotcha. So you kind of, you're like, you did the old I'm picking it up thing, but you're just in the wrong gear. You're like, I'm supposed to be here, but not there. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, cool. Yeah, I think that's something that I definitely suffer with sometimes, too, is, like, when I'm picking up a deck and I think it's supposed to play away, because I hear people say, like, oh, it's, like, Jund or whatever, you know? And then you play and it's like, this feels a lot more like Humans, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, awesome. Well, my always improving moment was over the last week, people have really been championing this game called Legends of Runeterra. And I had played it originally in beta and I hated it. I thought the game was bad. I have a lot of thoughts, but we don't need to go into here. I did not like Legends of Runeterra. I did not like it a lot, Sam, I am. And I was like, you know what? That was, like, early beta. It's been, like, basically a year, I think, they've had sets come out. You know, like, I don't want to judge this thing and condemn it forever. Maybe it's, like, the new game I love or something like that. It would be a fun time. And so I'm gonna open my heart to love again. This is my always improving moment. It's giving it a second shot. And I hate it still. I think it's terrible. I actually hate it more now than I did before. But I was willing to give it a second chance, which I think is something that we have to practice. I was being willing to be wrong and willing to go back and go in there with clear eyes and be like, okay, I'm going to put aside the things I didn't like before. I'm going to try this. I'm going to try these, you know, things out and see what I like, what I don't like, and just try to come back into it. And I tried. And even though it was a failure this time, that doesn't mean that practicing that and doing that is a long-term failure. So that's my always improving moment / bash on Legends of Runeterra. So if you were worried that we were going to become a Legends of Runeterra podcast, fear not.
We're not doing that.
No, never. Maybe not never, but most likely never. So yeah, that's going to do it for our always improving moment for this week. If you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/CCMTG and you can be my patron of the show. And you get to ask questions like this one. This week we were asked, what are some of your other favorite content creators, whether that be streamer, podcast, or article writers? So Allie, I'll take the lead here first. And some of my favorite streamers, besides, of course, at Mythic Meebo, probably my favorite streamer is Ash Lizzle.
I knew it. I was gonna call you out on that.
So not only is Ash really good at, like, playing Magic, especially for someone that's been playing for, like, 10 months or whatever, she's, like, very entertaining, and her music choice is very in line with mine, so I like Ash's stream a lot. I've been watching Corey Bymaster stream a good bit recently, and I also really like, they have one of those, dang, I'm so bad with names. It's like, they have, like, not their real name. That's, I'm so good with real names. Baker, VTCLA. Okay, I was like, it's a bunch of numbers. Yeah, Baker has been streaming a lot recently, and he's been doing these, like, analysis videos. I don't know if you've seen any of them, Allie, where he, like, talks over a match, and it started where Brad Nelson said, "I played so bad this event, I dare you to like go through and like rate me and whatever." And Baker's like, "Deal." And he spent like 9 hours reviewing like these three match or this these two sets against Javier and someone else. And I watched like maybe 2 hours of it, but it was so like insightful and stuff like that, and so helpful. And I think that, like, as a player, micro decisions are a real weakness of mine, and macro decisions are a real strength. So getting to hear Baker talk about these micro decisions was, like, it was so enlightening and so helpful. So that's that. And then when it comes to podcasts, for me, I listen to Arena Decklist. I listen to Up-to-Date MTG. I listen to the other podcasts on the network, like Mythic Cast, Limited Time Only, Pioneer Cast, that kind of stuff. And then the one podcast I don't really hear a lot of other people talk about that I try to stick up on, but it's hard, right? Because there's so many Magic podcasts out there all the time now, is I listen to Grindcast with Chris Caporappo and Collins Mullins. I unfortunately can't stay on top of that one as much as I'd like to, but I like their show a lot. So, Allie, what are some of your things?
Jeez, I'm going to have to start watching Baker do that, because that's a really cool concept that's relatively like unexplored in Magic streaming, I think.
Yeah, it was really cool, and you've interacted with Baker before, and you know how like in depth he can go, and there's no one to stop him and like get him back on the track. He spent like 15 minutes talking about the merit of growth spiraling versus not growth spiraling on a turn, and like the long lasting effects. And I like to think I'm pretty good at Magic, and I thought about the first 4 minutes of conversation, but the last 11 never crossed my mind, and I don't know if it ever will.
Oh my god.
And so, it was like, well, you know, growth spiral has like this, and then at the end of it, he was like, but you know, ultimately I think it's fine to probably not growth spiral here. And I was like, okay.
Oh my god.
Yeah, but it's really, really good. I know that sounds daunting, but he's done it for like a couple Pro Tour top eights, well, specific matches. And he, like, seems to pick, like, today we're going to watch aggro matches. And so he'll watch, like, you know, the last couple year aggro matchups. And it seems like he's only doing ones of formats he knows, which I think is actually even more helpful because he actually has insight into it. So
Yeah.
Sorry to cut you off then. So,
I mean, I don't think I really watch or listen to a whole lot of podcasts, as, like, weird as that is being on a podcast. But I do definitely spend a decent amount of time watching a handful of different streams, I think. I mean, a lot of it is, like, my friends, because it feels like I'm interacting with my friends then, especially over this period of time where I don't see them. So I really like watching Emma's stream. I'll watch Emily Visa stream.
Two great ones.
And, yeah, I'll watch Drake, Viral Drake stream. And then, like, outside of that, like, I think, like, Todd Anderson, Strong Sad is a really good stream. I mean, Ryan Overturf, I'm still just listing my friends. If I'm ever awake for Bloody's stream, I really like to catch her stream. The Mason Clark, good streamer.
Oh, wow, my heart.
And then, I mean, like, I guess if I'm looking, like, for a specific thing to, like, learn to, I'll, like, pop over to like Reed Duke or Ross Merriam.
Ross has never slept on.
Or X Whale, Will Kruger. If I really want to learn like something in modern specifically, I'll go like watch him stream too. And then I guess for like entertainment, I really like Jana Amari's stream.
Yeah. Jana's stream is good.
Yeah.
Did you see the Aphrexian Obliterator clip where she learned how that
works? Oh my god, that is the best clip on the internet. I'm so sorry, Jana, but that's hilarious.
Yeah, that's really, really funny. Oh my goodness. For those at home, basically, she didn't know how Aphrexian Obliterator would work, and she attacked it, and she had like two double damage things, so her whole board got sacrificed. And so, it's like, yeah, I'm gonna swing in here, and then, oh no!
Definitely recommend seeing that clip. It's a good one.
Yep. Do you listen to many Magic podcasts even before I know that like a lot of people podcast listening is down because of COVID. Did you listen to many before? Besides, you know, of course, the playset.
I really didn't. I don't know. I don't know. I think like podcasts are specifically hard for me because of my like hearing condition. So. what, like, streams have with that is, like, if I don't quite, like, catch what the streamer says or something, I still have that visual to try and, like, piece together what actually happened, whereas, like, podcasts can be pretty difficult, so I tend to just, like, stray away from them and favor something more visual or something that has, like, subtitles or whatever.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense. Awesome. Okay, well, I hope that was helpful. That those are some of the content we listened to. I could have gone on way more about like podcasts and streams and stuff like that. And but yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there, and you should definitely, you know, give it a try, right? Like, even if it turns out that it's your Legends of Runeterra, give them a shot. You know, let them have their shot. Another way to help support the show, like we talked about earlier, is go to Oasis Games. That's our sponsor. You can use code CCMTG to get 4% off every order, and use code Would That Be Good to get 15% off your first order. So that's a way to pick up some stuff, especially you know, with Ikoria out right now. There's a lot of cards, and I think they're like fairly cheap too. So like Yorion and Lurrus seem to be in like the $4 to $8 range, and those cards seemingly are going to be around forever. And now might be a good time to pick them up. So head on over to Oasis Games and do that. Now let's get on to the meat and potatoes, Allie, because I've been so excited to talk about this. I wanted to do a podcast this one a long time ago, but it wasn't right. We had to wait for it. This is our introduction to Historic. Allie, what is Historic, though? I know some people don't even know what that means. They're just gobbledygook to them.
Gobbledygook. What is gobbledygook?
Gobbledygook is Historic if you don't know what it is. Or it's just like, you know, like made up words. It's kind of like saying, like, I'm a Mythic player before there was, you know, Arena. It's like, what does that mean? Like, what is a Mythic player?
Yeah, so I guess the best way I can describe it is whatever cards are on Arena is Historic, because like it starts at what set does it even start at?
It starts at Ixalan, I believe, and goes forward, because that's when Arena started, was the Ixalan block.
Okay, so we're starting at Ixalan and going all the way up till current standard, but Wizards has also come out with three different, like, Historic anthology sets, which is a bunch of cards from sets older than Ixalan that they have decided to put into Historic.
Yeah, and so, and those cards are just kind of like ways to enable archetypes. So we see things like Thalia, we see things like zombie support, we see Mirari's Wake, we see Phyrexian Obliterator, we Ulamog, there's a whole bunch of cycling cards. The Hondans are in there. There's just like Hidatsu's Second Rite is in there. Allie, do you know what Hidatsu's Second Rite does?
I do not.
It is 4 mana to deal 10 damage to the opponent, but only if they're at 10 life. It is the best way to win a mental magic. There's a billion ways to beat that card. But yeah, there's a bunch of really cool and exciting and enabling cards added to the format. Unburial Rites was added. Just, you know, weird, cool cards to try to like, hey, we know there's some stuff in Standard that's like self-milly. What if we put Unburial Rites in? Could that lead to some cool stuff? And it has led to a really exciting format that has its own BNR list. It even has like a watch list. So sometimes cards get put on, they have a suspended list as well, where they put cards on for a short period of time. So like for a little while, Field of the Dead was banned, but they decided Field of the Dead was safe for Historic. So they unsuspended a Field of the Dead. They gave you, I believe they gave you a wild cards back or whatever. And then they're like, okay, but these other cards, like Once Upon a Time, Oko, Veil of Summer, they're still banned. They're too good. And we'll reevaluate them later. And it has led to just this really kind of awesome format, right?
Yeah, I never really had an interest in Historic, especially after they, so like they're like, oh cool, Historic, and then it felt like a week or two later they're like, but actually Pioneer, and that's the format that was actually getting like paper tournament support and put on Modo and stuff like that, where Historic didn't. So I'm like, okay, well, why would I play Historic then? When I can just play Pioneer, I guess.
Mm-hmm. But now we have the Arena MCs and the Arena Mythic Invitational. So if you haven't heard and you qualified for PT2 or PT3, your Pro Tour is now online. You probably have an email about it in the last couple of days. So you might want to go check there. But yeah, so those are going to be online in the Invitational is now historic. So we're going to have some historic events coming up. And so we've seen kind of like this gold rush to get to historic and figure things out, which has led to like a really exciting time. It also probably doesn't hurt that standard isn't the best right now. And so we're just seeing a lot of historic.
And they also added historic to the ladder on Arena. So people are kind of switching over to that as well.
Yeah, so before, historic was like just like the last 2 weeks of a standard format, and now it's a permanent thing, which is really awesome. I'm glad to see them being receptive to the feedback of like, hey, I just want to play with my, you know, here my Teferi's for all time, and well, here's your format, you know? And so, yeah, that's the kind of the format. Allie, before, we're just going to kind of talk about decks today in general and our feelings on them and stuff like that. So that way, if you're wanting to get into historic, maybe this will help give you kind of like a baseline for like, is this a deck I want to craft because maybe wild cards are tight right now? Or like, is this thing I should be looking into doing? What are their kind of thoughts on it? But before we really get into that, what do you think historic is about, like, as a format? Like, what are kind of like the points of historic, like the strong things to be doing, in your opinion?
I mean, like I said before, I think the cool thing about historic is there feels like there's something for everyone, right? Like, I think, there will be a point where historic, quote, is solved, quote. But to me, like, based on how historic is currently presenting, it just kind of looks like, even if it's, like, solved, there's still the different pillars of the format that can be, like, enticing to other people. And playing, like, necessarily, like, a tier 2 or tier 3 deck doesn't mean that you automatically lose, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's totally true. I think the lack of really strong answers leads to that as well. So, you know, if they can't punish you for trying to do something weird, it could be, you know, very advantageous to be doing something off the beaten path.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, looking at what we see in the format right now, like, I see aggro decks, I see combo decks, which kind of lumps, like, a bunch of things together. I see,
Sultai mid-range
ramp,
files.
Yeah, Sultai mid-range or ramp decks. And I think there's always just, like, something that you can be doing. Even, like, Mono Blue Temple. Like, that's a deck.
Yep. That deck plays Lurrus now. Like,
oh, God.
Yeah. They adopted white, and they got, like, Staggering Insight, Dante's Vanguard, and Lurrus. And it is nice. Yeah, so there's, like, a lot of just different things you can be doing. So let's kind of just jump in it here. We have, like, a list of decks that we kind of wanted to talk about today or that we see a lot on Ladder. And let's kind of start off with, before Historic Anthology, kind of the best deck in a lot of people's minds was this Gruul aggro deck that played Burning Tree Emissary, which was added to the format Anthology. And just kind of got in there really quick and Embercleave people out. Allie, have you played against the Burning Tree Gruul deck, or have you played against the new one that gets to use Ancient Ziggurat as a way to be, like, a more creature-based deck and have better mana? What are your kind of thoughts on these Gruul decks?
So I've both seen and played a decent amount of Gruul aggro with, like, Burning Tree, Embercleave, etc. And I've also played a little bit of the Obosh version of Gruul as well, and that's obviously doesn't have access to those two cards that I listed. They're both really aggressive. If you want to be doing something aggressive in the format, I think that's the way to go. I haven't seen any like traditional mono red decks or stuff like that. So, like, if you're really looking to be aggressive, consistent, and just kind of like crush all these combo decks, like, this is probably a good choice for you. I like these decks. I think they're very good still.
Yeah, I think these decks are great. And I think Ancient Ziggurat was a big get for them. Even if I haven't seen many people play, like, any number of Ancient Ziggurats in their Embercleave deck, because I think they're afraid of, like, that Nombo. But one of the few things that would hurt Gruul is that their dual land base wasn't that good. It was, like, kind of just fine. And now you get, like, you know, 10 to 11 really good duels for your creatures and curving out on people if you play Ancient Ziggurat. And so that might be something to kind of explore. And just being so proactive, I think, is so good in the format, because we talked about how there aren't a lot of great answers. There are a decent number of Wraths, but what we've learned from Embercleave is that, you know, you can get Wrath, but you only really need one creature to get across the finish line. So I really like these Gruul decks. I think they're good. And very beatable, which is so nice from an aggressive deck. It can be frustrating at times. Gruul does kind of feel like the fun police in a few ways, but I think if you want to beat Gruul, you definitely can. There's a lot of cheap creature interaction in white, for example, so nice to have that there. The next kind of pile of decks we have are Nexus of Fate decks, which I know I kind of gave you your dessert a little early there, Allie. That's a treat. We have so many of these decks to talk about. I'm really curious to hear what you feel about Nexus of Fate decks, because I was kind of off them in Historic until yesterday, where I kind of like got a deck that Corey got from you, it turns out, I didn't even know at the time, and won like 9 matches in a row and hit Mythic. So what do you think about Nexus of Fate decks in general? This, because there's so many. We saw Emma have like a 91% win rate after like 7 hours of streaming yesterday with Nexus of Fate. It's wild.
Oh, yeah. It's no secret. I love the card Nexus of Fate. There's always going to be people who are upset about its existence, especially in Historic. I'm still going to die on the hill as long as it's not the best deck in the format. Like, it's fine and y'all need to chill. Like, there's plenty of cards that I hate that are still fine in the format. Like, I don't know. I hate that Ulamog's in it, but Ulamog is fine. So, yeah. So I think we can like split Nexus into really like two kind of piles, and one being like a growth spiral pile, and then the other kind of being like Jeskai Walkers or Jeskai like stuff with Nexus of Fate is the two like Nexus pillars I've seen, and whether the growth spiral one be Bant or Simic. You should play Simic, it's better. But,
what do you like about Simic more than Vant, just out of curiosity? Is it just, like, the cleaner mana, or...?
Yeah, I think the... I mean, like, granted, the mana in Historic is pretty good now. I still think... I don't know, like, the Vant mana is so bad. Like, it feels fine, and then you play Simic, and Simic is so smooth and perfect, and you can play Blast Zone, and it's just... not even close. I would rather, like, the whole mana is, like, the core for the deck, so I don't really want to mess with that for Teferi, as much as Teferi is a powerful card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just, like, nice. Yeah.
Alright, so there's two. What do you feel about the Yorion Nexus of Fate? 80 cards, try to draw your Nexus deck.
Oh, man. This is... I actually had a ton of fun with these just different Jeskai variants, and there are still, like, a ton of different Jeskai Nexus variants. There's, like, I started the format with a 60-card Jeskai deck with a bunch of Planeswalkers, Oath of Teferi, so, like, Oath of Teferi with, like, Karn, Small Teferi, Big Teferi, just, like, an absurd amount of value in this deck, and then you just, like, have Nexus of Fate and Karn's Temporal Sundering, so you're just trying to take all the turns, go off with your Planeswalkers, and I really liked that deck. So I gave that deck to Corey Baumeister, and then he turned it into a Yorion deck, right?
Yeah.
With 80 cards, and he added Luka, right?
So his did not have Luka. I saw another one, okay. Actually a podcast listener, Jaren White, he went and got Mythic really easily, apparently, with like that same kind of deck, just adding Luka Agent to the deck.
Yeah, so I guess from there, Corey turned it into a Yorion deck, because I sent Corey the deck list. He's like, that's a lot of 3-ofs. You know what's good with 3-ofs? 20 extra cards. So, progression there, turns it into a Yorion deck. Other people mess with playing Luka in the deck, and probably cut, like, most of the Nexus of Fate, but still, like, I played a list today that had one Nexus of Fate.
Interesting. That's kind of wild, and they still have Karn Temporal Sundering at that point?
No, not in the Agent decks.
Oh, weird. I would think that'd be so good in the Agent deck over the one Nexus. Like, you can't loop it for whatever to, like, have that win with Teferi-type stuff, but you can, like, unsummon your Agent and replay it and have that extra turn.
Yeah, that's fair. I think there's a lot of exploring to be done with these different types of decks, and I actually really like the Jeskai ones, too.
Yeah, what I like about the Jeskai deck is that it's really kind of like a Super Friends deck that uses the Time Walk as a way to accrue, like, an insurmountable amount of advantage off, like, Fire's Invention Yorion turns, and just is like, okay, my deck's a little clunky, but, like, if I can take that extra turn, I just overwhelm you with so much. Like, you just can't realistically actually beat me in a game of Magic. And so, I've liked playing that deck a lot. I'm a little biased because I'm on, like, an 11-game win streak right now with it. So I'm trying to, you know, not be too biased. But it's a nice deck. It's super fun. It has some weird lines and does some weird things. Like, the one I was playing had Karn, the Great Creator. And you have, like, a weirdly wide Karn sideboard for such a small format. Like, some of the cards in the anthologies have just been really helpful. Like, having Ratchet Bomb as a way to answer these go-wide decks. Like, you know, you take a couple extra turns, Ratchet Bomb is a lot better. And just things like that. So, it's been really cool to play those decks. Also, if you add 20 cards, your deck gets 20% more efficient. That's the math. Yeah, so that's, like, you know, the different Nexus of Fate decks. There's a lot of different things you can be doing. And there's a lot of answers to Nexus of Fate in the format. You know, like, we have Thalia as an example of one of the things. There's some really aggressive decks, so you can put a real clock on those decks and kind of throw them off. Let's kind of talk about the Field of the Dead decks, though, because that's, like, the other kind of Yorion deck we see floating around. Are these, like, go-over-the-top ramp, I'm a Field of the Dead deck, flicker my Golos, flicker my fires, you know, do a bunch of crazy stuff with Yorion. Yo Man kind of popularized this deck when Anthology first dropped on the first day. Ali, what are you feeling about these Field of the Dead decks?
I mean, I played it for a little bit, and it kind of felt like coming home because I really liked the standard deck before Field of the Dead was banned, but the more I played it, the more it just feels like it's not extremely favored in the format, but I know a lot of other people did well with it, so I'm kind of meh on it, but it's definitely working for other people.
Yeah, it feels like we're both kind of playing these Nexus of Fate decks, and that kind of deck just, like, doesn't, you know, like, oh, cool, you made a bunch of zombies, I'll remember that on my third extra turn, you know? Like, yeah. We're not really playing the same game. So yeah, I think those decks are pretty good, and if your opponent's trying to play, like, some of those Sultai or Grixis Soupy decks that people like to play in the format, you know, because they have, like, Maelstrom Pulse and cool things like that, and, like, my Maelstrom Pulse would beat your army of zombies. Like, the Field of the Dead deck just is like, no, you're really not going to beat me in some sort of fair game. Like, you're going to need to do something fundamentally unfair to beat me. And yeah, they just play so many good cards.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, definitely if you're looking to beat some fair decks, I think this is a good choice. Can probably also just kind of, like, tune your thing to be good against aggro. Probably have to play a large amount of board wipes because you're an 80-card deck and you want to make sure you don't die. But as soon as you can just, like, ramp and get your 2/2s into play, it's really hard for aggro to kind of get through you.
Yeah, I feel that that does a really good job of, like, once you get going, you will stabilize. Like, you know, you will just get enough zombies to stop people. So, yeah, it is wild, though, that Yorion, like, does kind of work so nicely with Field of the Dead, right? Like, you just kind of have that extra space for lands that you wanted, and you have all these blink effects, and your blink effects, some of them, like, I've seen decks play Omen of Nylea to, like, go grab land, so that's nice with Field of the Dead and everything. There's just a lot of really powerful and cool things to be doing in the format in that angle.
It's also just, like, really fun. It's, like, just as fun as the standard deck was, so if you really enjoyed this deck, or if you want to just have fun in Historic, I think this is a good place to start. You can even, like, make it into, like, a weird, funny Mazes End deck if you really want.
Yeah, that was the first thing. I actually hopped in Yeoman's stream. I'm like, I like that we both went to Field of the Dead, buddy, but you were like, I'm going to be super efficient and win, and I'm like, how can I Mazes End people? So yeah, there's that, and then the other Field of the Dead deck that isn't as popular right now, but Ali Andrazi was really big on before, was this Jund Field of the Dead deck that used Dread Presence and Dry to the Elysian Grove and Scape Shift. So you could Scape Shift for a bunch of zombies, but if you had Elysian Grove and Dread Presence in play, you Scape Shift to actually kill them. Kind of like the, you know, the modern deck. You just shock them a bunch of times. So that's another really cool deck that you can kind of explore in the format. And actually, it plays Karuga the Macro Sage. Like, the deck before just had no CMC cards below 3 for permanents. And Karuga is just like, cool, I'm about that. So you get to play a companion, which that's been one of the crazier things to me, is just how weird the companion's roles have been in Historic. It feels like only Lurrus and Yorion are really seeing play, but they're not seeing play, well, specifically Lurrus isn't seeing play in the way that it does in other formats. It's just kind of weird. It's kind of like a like a aggro card now.
Yeah, I've seen it in like Jund's Sacrifice, but that's kind of it.
Yeah. Yeah, Jund's Sacrifice and the Tempo deck are the only things I've really seen it in. I have seen it as a main deck card and one of the decks we're going to talk about later in Mono White, just as like a, or a sideboard card maybe, just like, I need to grind sometimes, and I've got a lot of really good one drops. Let's talk about the mid-range decks in the format, though. There are a lot of different, like, 2 to 3 color decks that you could be playing. There's, like, Sultai, there's Grixis, there's Black Green. You got some really cool enablers from Historic. Allie, what do you think about these various mid-range decks? You're a Jund girl in a, you know, Yorion world.
I was so skeptical. I found this, quote, Sultai control deck. I think it's more mid-range, maybe just mislabeled, but, and I was, like, very skeptical to play it. I played it on stream today and beat both the Winota deck and, oh, geez, what else is a good deck? Oh, and the Gruul deck. I was very close against Nexus of Fate as well, but just stumbled on lands in game 3. So, if you're beating, like, 3 of the best decks in the format, like, I'm here for some Sultai mid-range, then.
Yeah, they've gotten some weirdly, like, pretty powerful cards added to their deck because of Anthology. And that's also some of the weird things, right? It's kind of like, I don't know about you, but I always forget the Anthology cards until I get down to deck building where I'm playing against them, you know? It's like, I know what's on Arena. And it's like, no, you don't.
I think what's cool about the mid-range decks, too, is, like, I think Historic is super diverse, but I also think Historic is comparable to, like, Legacy in one way, where you can kind of play, like, whatever you want, but sideboard cards are actually efficient. Like, you can tailor your sideboard to almost, like, be able to beat whatever you want. Because there's, like, a couple different main strategies people are going for.
Wow, I have the clickbait tweet ready for this week's episode of the podcast. At Mythic Mebo says, Historic's a lot like Legacy.
Oh, God.
Oh, dang. Wow, we got a whole new subset of people maybe coming to Historic now. Yeah, I do kind of agree, though, with what you're saying. I think that that's pretty true. Have you played against the like the heavy explore decks recently? That play kind of like the old deck from like 2 years ago.
I'm not sure.
Okay, so they're like kind of like Sultai decks that rely on Uro and just like an absurd amount of kill spells, and then like call the death dwellers, and then the explore creatures, and they kind of like just try to turbo to an Uro, and then like kill everything and buy back these things so they don't die against aggro decks. I don't think they're very good, but they're really fun to play, actually. Like, I played a couple matches with a decklist I found online, and it was kind of like, okay, this is, like, a cool thing you can be doing in the format.
Sweet.
Yep. This isn't on the list, but actually, speaking of cool things in the format, I saw someone play a Storm Herald combo deck. You know Storm Herald?
Remind me.
So it's from Theros. It's 2 and a red for 2/2 with haste. That when it enters the battlefield, attach all auras from your graveyard onto it. At the end of turn, yeah. Exile them. So they play Colossification, and then there's some card called, like, Something Mask from Anthology that's +2/+2 for each other aura, or sorry, each other enchantment on the battlefield. So it plays, like, a bunch of enchantment creatures to also protect it, and then just buys it back, and then it just, like, one-shots you, and, like, plays a bunch of self-mill. Just, like, a really weird thing you can do in the format that's kind of sweet.
Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the mid-range decks are cool. Allie, have you played much with Mono-White?
I have not played it or seen it, to be honest.
Okay, so before Anthology 2, I am convinced, Allie, that Mono White, with like Heliod and just grinding people out, was the best deck in Historic, and it was not close. And I think the main reason for that is you like actually had sideboard plans for like everything at the top people were doing. You actually had like a great grind game against decks that you needed to, and you were fast enough against the other decks. And it was, I think it was actually just like the best deck in the format by a large margin. I don't think that's true anymore, unfortunately, but I played, like, a lot of Mono White, and it was just, like, literally free wins all the time. Spencer, former host of the show, started out on Mono White in the format. You got so many amazing one-drops from, like, Saracen into Soul Warden, and the deck, you have Ranger of Eos. You just had, like, a lot of really powerful cards, and you would just, like, mow people down, and it wasn't particularly close, and it felt like almost nothing could beat you. Unfortunately, now it feels like you're more in line with the rest of the format, but I have played Mono White, I have played against Mono White, and it seems to still be a powerful deck in the format, and having Lurrus as a way to grind in the sideboard is really nice. You do have just a certain amount of one-drops in Mono White that are good, and have weird utility, and so Lurrus kind of helps there, and buying back your Giant's Pride mates are insane. So I love this deck, if you couldn't tell. So I'm a big fan.
Sweet.
Yeah. Also, it plays the Ajani from M20 or M19 that, like, wipes the board, and that against the Field of the Dead decks is actually unreal. Like, you would just gain instant life or whatever, where they would make zombies and your Soul Wardens would trigger, and you just wrath them on one turn and one-shot them. It's crazy. If you're looking for, like, a aggressive deck that can go long, I would highly suggest Mono White over Gruul. Well, let's kind of talk about tempo decks, though, because that's something else that's kind of really popped up in this set. So there's the Mono Blue deck you kind of talked about before. There's the Blue-White Lurrus deck that I alluded to earlier in the podcast. And then have you seen the Blue-Red Obosh tempo deck?
I have. I don't think that deck is very good, but obviously people play it for a reason. So I don't know. I don't want to like crap on everyone's playstyle or decks, but it just seems like if you want to be doing something like that, I would favor just Mono Blue or the Blue-White one.
Yeah, it's a really cool deck idea that seems like it should be really strong, right? Like, you play a lot of really good one drops, you have a lot of really strong interaction, you have Obosh to kind of like close the door, which can sometimes be a problem with tempo decks, you know, but now Brazen Barber at end of turn into an Obosh is 6 damage, that's just so much. But it just doesn't play out particularly great, even against, like, the clunky decks. Like, I was playing the Nexus Jeskai deck or whatever, and I was like, oh no, this is going to be miserable. My deck's all, like, 3 CMC plus cards. And I didn't even stick a Teferi, but I just kind of, like, played around their stuff and threw it, and you were just able to win. And I feel like you could never do that against, like, the Mono Blue deck of old or the Lurrus decks. So...
It definitely seems like there are more opportunities to, like, stick cards because they have, I don't know, just like cards that need to be used so specifically, whereas like you look at Mono Blue, I haven't really seen the Lurrus one as much, but Mono Blue, you never really need to tap out or do anything. Like, you can just like completely operate on your opponent's turn other than the Siren Storm Tamer or whatever it's called.
Yeah, the Mono Blue deck, and also its answers are just so more, like, they're just much more broad, like you talked about, right? Like, Stomp and Petty Theft are really strong and good, like, versatile tempo cards, and Ionize is kind of, like, a good one, but besides that, it's kind of like, well, your cards don't particularly line up really well if your opponent's doing, like, things on two different axes. You know, if I'm trying to, like, cast a spell while I have a Planeswalker in play, that can be really challenging to line up your spells correctly or to figure out how to sequence them. Or if I just have Wizard's Retort, you know, it's like, all right, I will stop your Teferi. Don't need to worry about Stomp figuring out how I'm going to kill this Teferi with that. So, not trying to poo-poo on anyone's time, but it seems like some gobbledygook to me.
That being said, though, I'm definitely a fan of Mono Blue Tempo. I think it's very good. You will die to Mono Green, though, because they, like, put a million shifting Ceratopses in their sideboard.
Yeah, they're like, we can't win game one, but by golly.
Oh yeah, they definitely can't win game one in any capacity, and then they're like, shifting Ceratops, shifting Ceratops, shifting Ceratops. I'm like, well, you got me.
Beats. You gotta pick up the old Stony Boy in the sideboard for that one, Allie.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, I love Stone Coil Serpent. I'm always trying to fit that in decks. So good.
That's, like, so funny to side in Stone Coil Serpent against a mono-colored deck.
Yeah. It is kind of funny. It's like, what does that card say? Protection from multicolor. I'm bringing it against mono-green. Yeah. That has worked a lot, though, in Standard. Back at the beginning of the format, I beat a lot of shifting Ceratops by just, you know, playing a big Stony Boy. Let's talk about this deck. I believe this won the Hooglandia tournament. It's a deck that I thought was going to be kind of insane and historic when I heard about everything coming out. And this is Winota. Allie, what do you feel about Winota?
I mean, I don't like the card at all. I think it enables not fun gameplay. I mean, obviously we look at the Hooglandia open and it's just everywhere in the top 8. So, not a huge fan. I'm also just not a huge fan of, like, banning cards either, so I don't know. It feels like there's enough things to kind of combat it in the format. But yeah, this deck is just like really powerful. Sometimes it just doesn't even matter what you do.
Yeah, I would say, so the Winota deck that I've seen most popular, and correct me if you've seen different stuff, is the one that's all creatures main deck. And then sideboard has, like, creature kill spells, I guess, for the mirror matches and stuff like that. Is that, are we thinking about the same deck before I move forward?
The Umori one? Yeah, the Umori. Into the double damage creature?
Yes. Yeah. Not like Age on Treachery, Steal Your Girl.
No.
Okay.
No.
Alright. Yeah, so I feel like that deck is, like, it has the potential to just, like, curve out on people and kill them out of nowhere, right? Like Llanowar Elf and Rabble Master, or sorry, a War Boss into Winota is like, that's a really strong curve. But if your opponent interacts on that curve, it really kind of falls apart. And if they don't draw Winota, their deck is really bad. It's like actually unreal bad. So I'm kind of curious, like, if you can just play decks like the Jeskai Nexus of Fate deck, or like just mid-range decks in general, and just beat that deck up. And that deck's only really good if everyone agrees to not interact with each other. Because that's kind of been my feel on that deck. And I tried playing that deck, and I, like, ran into a couple decks that tried to, like, you know, not just do their own thing and play Magic against me. And I had a really hard time beating them. Has that been your experience? Have you? Because I know you were saying you played, like, you beat them up with the Sultai deck, right?
Yeah, with Sultai, we won, I think. Just because we were able to actually interact with everything. But, I mean, like, even a lot of the cards when I was playing Nexus, like, Legion Warboss is already just a good card against Nexus, so it feels, and, like, Thalia is a good card against things. Mm-hmm. They're, like, playing the Goblin to kill lands, which is annoying. It just feels like all their cards are super annoying. I don't like playing against that type of, like, cheat-out strategy, and, I mean, like, I died with even just, like, one Winota trigger off of an Imori, and I took, 16 in a turn.
Yeah. Yeah, it really only takes one Winota trigger. I don't buy the argument that, like, oh, the Winota might whiff as your plan to beat that deck, but I think whiffing on getting Winota is, like, an actual problem with the deck. So, I'm curious to see if they can do stuff to fix that, because it does feel like, and now, were you playing the blue-green Nexus deck, or, like, the Jeskai one? Because I feel like the blue-green one.
The Simic, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Oh, sorry, Simic. Sorry, Watsy, please. but yes, yeah, so, yeah, I'm curious. I think that deck's fine, though. Like, I don't think it's terrible. I don't think it's amazing, but I do agree that it can be very frustrating to play against. I think we were in a Google Hangout call, and I freaked out because they hit double Marauder thing on me, and I hadn't seen that before.
Dax.
Yeah. The fact that it doubles doesn't seem right, but I guess makes sense. So
I get it conceptually. Oh my god, I was streaming, and that happened, that they hit two of them. I'm like, if this stacks, I'm going to be mad. And people on my chat were like, well, of course it stacks, because it's a double-double. I'm like, I get it conceptually, but I'm just saying it should not work like that, and it pisses me off.
Yeah. Yeah, that feels like something that they were like, oh, we'll let it work this way, because, I mean, this card's 7 mana for a 4-4. You know, like, you gotta, like, put other things in play. Like, we believe in people.
Yeah.
Is that card even in Standard, or was that, like, a dual deck card? Because I had never seen that card before until I got, you know, Winota'd.
It was an Ixalan.
It was an Ixalan? Okay. I thought it was like like, you know how they have like those unplayable 7-drops in those decks, and sometimes they see play in weird formats. I thought this was that situation.
All right. Oh, like a Biobox Kenrith that totally wasn't meant to see play, except in EDH.
Yeah, that one's a big yikes. I wonder how good Fires would have been all that time if they didn't have Kenrith, or if Kenrith wasn't playable. It'd have been wild. Let's talk about Ulamog Ramp. This is the other deck. This is an Aliantrazi deck. We see Ulamog in the Field of the Dead decks and other decks as well, but this is specifically the all-in ramp deck, because this is kind of the only, like, weird creature combo ramp deck that I saw. Ali, have you seen this deck before we move forward?
Is this, like, literally just, like, green creatures that ramp plus, like, Uro Growth Spiral into Genesis Ultimatum and Ulamog?
No, that seems very Aliantrazi, so I know how you could have got there. This one's way more jank. So, do you know Veneral Prodigy, I believe is the name? It's the blue-green legend from Ikoria that if a creature would make mana, it makes an additional one.
Yeah.
So it plays that, the green ley line, a bunch of mana elves, Growing Rite of Iklamok to find those elves and become Gaia's Cradle, and Ulamog, and Castle Garenbrig, and that's the deck. It just, like, slams fatties on the board, and that's all it does. Yeah? Cool. Are you interested? Does this sound like a good time?
Ulamog makes me big sad, so no. Mm. I did craft three of them, though, so...
Also, I don't want to name names or out anyone, because this is a safe place. But if you want to get the cards, the anthology does offer 4x cards when you buy it, even if it's maybe not the most clear thing in the world. And that's a way to save wild cards, and so...
Yeah, it must be. If I buy it now, will they give me wild cards for the cards I already did?
I imagine they'll give you gems, because you own duplicate copies of the cards. So
the, maybe I will.
Yeah, I don't know. I imagine you have to have crafted most of the good ones by now.
Yeah, I think I need to craft the second one while it's still in the store.
Yeah, I would snap that one off while you can. That one's actually really strong, too. Like, that one had a lot of really good cards. What was the zombie that Jerry won the Pro Tour with? The black one drop?
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you tap three zombies, you draw a card, you discard a card, make a zombie. People at home know what we're talking about. That's in Historic, and that card hasn't seen enough play yet. That card's so good. I'm so excited to see that. All right, eventually that deck will see play. Let's talk about the next deck. This is a deck that we've seen kind of pop up as an answer to the Gruul and Winota decks in a way, and this is the Vampire's Midrange deck. Allie, have you played with this deck at all or seen it?
I have not.
Okay, so it's kind of like Vampires of Standard, where you're really, really, really good if you stick Sorin and you get the Desolation Champion, and you're kind of average the rest of the time, but you just have better removal spells now because you have more cards to play with, and you have like slightly better sideboard cards.
That's fair.
Yeah, and it's just kind of reasonable. Like, I don't know about you, but I actually really liked Vampires as a deck. I liked it even before they got Sorin. Like, it was just kind of fun to play sometimes, so get that deck back in your life. It's fun. It's like a reasonable-ish deck to play. It's not the best deck in the world. It's not the worst.
Yeah, sweet.
Yeah. All right, not a whole lot to say about Vampires, but let's talk about the last deck that everyone assumed would be the terror of the format, the unbeatable deck when Historic was announced, and that's Kethis Combo. Allie, have you seen what Kethis Combo looks like these days, what they're trying to do?
Not since the recent Anthologies was released, no.
Okay, so I've seen a little bit of it. Well, first off, if you're at home listening and you remember Kethis, you're like freaking out right now. It's not even close to the best deck or that great, so don't worry. It might secretly be the best deck and we just don't have a good version, but as of the time of this recording, I can safely say it's not. It just kind of plays like a weird... Like, so there's like two versions. There's one that looks like the deck, that the old standard deck, they're kind of all in, that's very weak to hate cards, and there are a lot of weak hate cards and dies to pressure. And then there's like this weird mid-range one that people are trying to play now, where you have things like Uro and stuff like that, and you essentially like try to establish this board state that's really awkward for them. And if they ever like tap out enough for you to combo, you combo, and if not, you kind of nickel and dime and kill them. And you have like Oath of Kaya to Fairy, Uro, Kethis is like a thing in the Ambers, and then you kind of just play like a weird game plan of like, okay, I'm going to mill myself to bring back this Uro a bunch of times. And that's kind of like a cool, interesting way, but it doesn't feel like that's it. That's what I should do with my Kethis. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think, I do think the deck has been, like, historically really good. Haha, get it, historically.
Oh, I get it. This is historically one of our best episodes. Oh! All right, keep talking.
But sorry,
you're good.
Don't know what's wrong with this. But I don't think there's like one enough people like actually working on it, and two, I don't think a lot of people actually just enjoy playing it and clicking through it on Arena. So I can definitely see it's a thing of just like people don't want to deal with playing it, if that makes sense. Like I know like Bloody's super into it. I know Emma is super into it. But I mean, like, Emma's been devoting all her time to,
Nexus.
Nexus, and yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, that's going to kind of do it for the decks we had listed today. I don't really have anything else to add to Kethis. There are a bunch of really cool and wild things you can do in this format. There's some stuff we didn't even talk about today. There's like multiple different treasure hunt decks. There's one that plays Zenith Flare and has all the 30 cycling lands because they put the other 20 in Historic. So you just treasure hunt, discard your whole hand, Zenith Flare them. That's a wild deck that's in the format. We have Waste Not decks. There's just a lot of really cool things. This format's really awesome. If you're stuck at home and you're kind of bored of Standard and Arena's your main way to play Magic, I highly, highly suggest getting an anthology package, going in the deck, finding a deck that you find online, or maybe a deck we talked about today, playing it and having a great time. Historic is a blast right now. And just like every time a Magic format's new, it's more fun than maybe it even turns out to be at the end, just because it's so new and so refreshing, and there are so many different things going on. And there's so many unexplored things, too. There are a lot of Enchantress cards. There's no Garinda combo deck that we've seen yet. There's a lot of even cards. You have like three more sets of them, you know? Maybe there's something there. There's just a lot of really cool stuff. And so I highly, highly suggest you check out this format. It is a blast, and it might legitimately be my favorite Eternal format. Like, even before the newest set came out. So. Yeah. Awesome. Well, Allie, if someone wants to find you, where can they go?
You can find me at twitch.tv/mythic_mebo, or you can find me at Twitter at mythicmebo.
Allie, if someone wanted to watch us two play a game of Commander together, where would they go to do that, along with some other friends of yours?
That's still on my stream at Twitch, and I do that on Wednesdays, so you can be sure to check me out at 10 a.m. Central Time to watch some Commander action with me and my friends.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. I had a great time on it. Someone said I am their favorite EDH villain, and honestly, that made my day. You can find me on twitch.tv/TheMasonClark, and you can follow me on Twitter at MasonEClark, and you can listen to us each on the show every week, and follow the Twitter at CCMTG. That way you know when the show goes live. I tweet out a C+ meme at best. That's my brand, and that's what the show, and you'll know. So thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you all next week for another episode of Constructed Criticism.